That's right. Welcome in. It is Preds Insiders here on ESPN 102.5, The Game. We are streaming on the Game Nashville app. How's it going, everyone? Chase McCabe in tonight for Ryan Porth, as he's a little bit under the weather, so I am pinch hitting for him. And joining me tonight live from Boom Boz here in Bellevue as we get ready for Smashville Live, Thomas Willis from the Nashville Predators, co-host of the POP, the Predators official podcast.
Yes, perhaps the second and more important title, at least in regard to this station.
Yes.
The Preds official podcast,
hey,
yes.
Look, we are down with the POP.
Yeah, let's do it.
We're so excited to have you here tonight, coming off a win. How about points in 7 of the last 8 for the Nashville Predators? So you go back to November when it was, what was going on? Mm-hmm. You know, losses to Colorado and Chicago, bad losses. And now you're another month in December.
Right.
Things seem to be going in the right direction.
Well, I remember at the time, because that, of course, was the 6-game losing streak, looking up the stats from last season and reminding myself I'd forgotten that the Predators had lost 6 games in a row in December last season, went 0-5-1, something they just did in November. And they dug themselves out of that hole very quickly because they proceeded to go 5-0-2 in their next 7 following that 6-game skid. They have almost done nearly that same mark. They went 3-0-1 to start the 2 big wins over the Blues, of course, stumbled. But then, as you just said, with points of 7 of 8, they're not all the way out of that hole from the 6-game losing streak, but starting to play better, starting to look better, starting to pass that eye test, and you're finally getting back to where you were in the standings after, to be candid, fantastic October, subpar November, and now the December month has started to kind of respond and get you back to where you want it to be.
3-1 the final last night against the San Jose Sharks. Let's start with the goaltender, Juuse Saros. He got the nod, and you look at his body of work as of late, it's been awesome.
Yep.
But last night, when that goal went in for San Jose, I was just standing there going, really? Can this guy not get a shutout?
I mean,
he had played so well all night last night, stopping 24 of 25 in a wild game, but Saros getting it done.
100%. Seemed unfair. Seemed a bit unjust to take that shutout away from him because, as you mentioned, it's 0-0 in the third period, and he really, meaning Juuse Saros, kept them in that contest, especially in the second period, I would argue, and almost makes the same identical breakaway save like 3 or 4 times, you know, right? So the Predators have finally taken the lead a little later in that third, 1-0, faces a penalty shot.
Yep.
Has to go slide over to the left, makes the pad, save with the pad, then does it again on a breakaway, then does it again later on a partial breakaway. That's wild. I mean, I think the stats would show you, at least in the shootout, a shooter's going to score about 40% of the time, right? And so the Sharks effectively had a shootout in that they had 3 or 4 breakaways, and he stops all of them.
The thing that's so funny to me in this business, and you know, that if Pekarinen maybe isn't playing up to Pekarinen levels, maybe just a little bit off, Saros is playing really well, then you start having that, is it time? Is the torch being passed? And no, I don't think that's the case. I think, if anything, you're going to get to a point where it's 1A, 1B, but I don't even think it's there yet. This is still Pekarinen's team, but it's nice knowing that whenever 74 is in net, you know you're going to get the same kind of play that you get out of 35.
Yes, and head coach Peter Laviolette would tell you before the season, and even within a game week, that they are so confident in both goaltenders at this point, they actually will even go to the analytics and be able to say, okay, Saros, he'd already played the Sharks this season. He started against the Sharks. He's traditionally been good, and they will use that data a lot of times. Again, like you said, so in this week, there are no back-to-back, so it's not as if, you know, you're using both goaltenders that you have to use them at certain times. And yet they're able to look and say, okay, Rene's excellent against the Sabres. We'll use him on Thursday. We are just as confident in Saros and can play him on Tuesday. And I think you've seen particularly this year, Rene's looked a lot better when he's gotten more rest, right?
Yep.
Remember years ago there used to be that stat of like, oh, Rene's
He has to play.
Yeah,
he
has to play. He's no good when he rests too much. And I think, you know, now that, again, just having the birthday, the start of last month to be 37, and now that he's at that stage, I at least have noticed from an eye test perspective that when he gets that extra time, he looks even better.
Yeah.
Look, so I think that only helps.
I'm 32. I'm better when I get rest. So, I mean, I
get
it.
We all are.
I get it from Pekarinen's point of view. So, Saros getting it done. Nick Bonino, though, continues to be this hero we don't deserve.
Yeah.
12 goals on the season. Does it again last night. That line overall, though, Thomas, has been a lot of fun to watch.
Mm-hmm. And it has, and I think you can see just how good it is by the fact that it's remained intact.
Yeah.
Even in the midst of a losing streak, even in the midst now that they've got points in 7 out of 8, meaning the Preds, it has been Grimaldi, Smith, and Bonino the whole season, effectively. And I think there were arguments, or, oh, do we need to change that too if you're Peter Laviolette, because the offense isn't working. And I would say you have to give him credit for sticking with it, because I am amazed, Chase, and I'm trying to say this is a side topic we have to go down, but, like, Rocco Grimaldi impresses me almost every night with what he's able to do on offense. I'm like, how is he creating that chance? And then Smith, of course, just old reliable, 20 goals every year, that guy. And then you're right, to then put it all together in the middle with Nick Bonino, your leading goal scorer with 12 goals. Again, I don't know who would have thought? I don't know that you're necessarily extrapolating that out, but all of a sudden you're thinking to yourself, is he getting 20, 25, 30? I mean, again, not necessarily, but
17's his career high with the Preds. I think it was 18 with Pittsburgh and 22 overall. Yeah.
But getting some power play time, which is big. But then truly only playing the minutes of about a third line center in that, whatever, 14, 15, 16 minute range. And yet, like I said, even over that last month in November that wasn't great, and especially now, they have been the one line that's created chances consistently.
Well, and the thing with him is, you know, the last couple of years, David Poile's had to make moves at the deadline, and a lot of what he's been looking for has been that net front presence. Last year, Brian Boyle acquired, Wayne Simmons acquired. You know, two guys that are known for doing that, being in the greasy areas. Now Nick Bonino has shifted his game to being that type of player, because he's a majority of the goals he's scoring are right there in front of the net, getting the tap in. Mm-hmm. Plays being set up by Smith and Grimaldi. And poor Craig Smith not even getting the assists.
I know.
the defense, they're making a lot of plays for him. But Craig Smith is the one setting a lot of that up and really chasing the puck. He's played well. He's just not getting the points for it. I believe that the hockey gods owe him. And so there's probably going to be a streak coming here pretty soon. But Nick Bonino, that net front presence is really awesome.
Well, and I would add that with Bonino, there are specific elements in his game that he's not only very skillful in, but maybe the best of on the team. And just a few examples. I mean, again, he's got the hands to be able to win, be one of the best faceoff men. Yep. You'll see it in overtime, right? Laviolette will send him out for the opening faceoff of overtime, win that, hopefully, and then he retreats back off of the ice, and they put a different player on it. Like, but he relies and trusts him that much. And then additionally, again, not to say he's anywhere to the level of a Philip Forsberg, for example, but has the talent enough that you'll notice gets more deflections than a lot of guys in front of them, as you were saying. Is able to, you know, stick lift and steal a lot of times. That's why he is kind of that classic and traditional two-way center, and I think that's what you want on the third line.
A guy that we were talking about earlier today as you listen to Preds Insiders, Chase McCabe, Thomas Willis, in for Ryan Porth tonight. Ryan Johansson and Darren McFarland from Darren Donick and Chase brought this up. Whenever Ryan Johansson becomes angry Joey, is what we'll call him, generally good things happen.
Right.
He got the power play goal last night, but it was a chippy game. So you had Roman Josi that was, you know, not really very happy. Ryan Johansson was another one of those guys that wasn't very happy. And, you know, it showed in his play last night, because I thought he had a heck of a game.
Yes, right. So to that end, we were joking about that in the press box during the game as well, just the number of players that were turning into the angry version of themselves. That we did not necessarily see it last night, but angry Philip Forsberg is often also a very good thing for Nashville when that happens. Yes, I think you wanted to see the Predators respond in the way that they did in the third period, right? Like, you saw the defense and the penalties and the kerfuffle and all that at the end of the second. That's great. That's all well and good. Thank you. But to definitely be the better team in the third period, which I think most people would agree the Predators were over the Sharks, that's what you wanted to see. And I think a lot of times Ryan Johansson, when needed, I don't want to say he wakes up per se, but kind of, you know, like, hey, I'm one of the bigger guys on the ice. Like, I can make things happen in this manner when I need to. And I think we've seen that in the playoffs over the years in particular. I'm thinking especially 2 years ago against the Jets, before that in the Cup final run, the St. Louis Blues series, he was excellent, for example. So you're right. I think he's had three or four, I would say, power play goals right in front of him against Washington last night, of course, where he kind of, you know, says, hey, I traditionally am playing with, you know, even more skilled wingers, but I've got Cal Yarncroke, a smaller guy, or Philip Forsberg, and I need to use my size and be able to contribute, and he's done that.
Well, and I feel like last year he got some experience of when Forsberg and Arvidsson were out of the lineup. I mean, he got used to playing with other people, mm-hmm, and had a really good year, and that was something that Peter Laviolette praised over and over again about how just versatile Johansson has been able to be as a top line center on this team, and you're seeing it again because things are mixing around. Victor Arvidsson, of course, out of the lineup. Philip Forsberg was out earlier in the year. Plus, you had the addition of Matt Duchene, so things were already going to be different. But Ryan Johansson, I feel as of late, is starting to come into his own. Like to see it a little bit more consistently.
Sure.
But I think that he's really starting to play well.
No, I think that's a good point because I think to that line, the Johansson-Forsberg-Arvidsson line, one of the best in hockey over the last 3 or 4 years, I think Forsberg and Arvidsson are the two names that are often mentioned first. And I think to your point, now that he's played with some other players, now that he's needed to be relied on a little bit more, he's become that first or second line center that the Predators really need.
He is Thomas Willis of the Nashville Predators and, of course, the Preds official podcast. We will get into that a little bit more as we go along. Chase McCabe here with you. It's Preds Insiders. We're live at Boomba's here in Bellevue. And this is brought to you by Cool Springs Laser Dentistry, Wyatt Johnson Ford, Kerry Zire, Remax Elite, and Gino Zeiss. When we come back, what has righted the ship? We will discuss that. We will dive into that and get you ready for Buffalo as well. As you listen to Preds Insiders here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. And we're back. It is Preds Insiders. We're live at Boomba's in Bellevue, just off Highway 100 in the Publix Shopping Center. Smashville Live coming up here in just a little bit. I will be joined by the president and CEO, Sean Henry. Looking forward to that. But Thomas Willis from NashvillePredators.com, the co-host of the POP, the Preds official podcast. You have a lot that you do.
I was about to say, I feel like I've only added to my title since we started doing these shows.
You work with us on the radio side.
I apologize for making it worse on you.
Because I'm like, what is your official title? And he goes, just say NashvillePredators.com because it's just easier that
way. That's the website you should go to.
So I asked the question, because we were talking about it to start the show, has the ship been righted by the Nashville Predators? And the thing that has stood out to me through all of this, and I'm going to go since the beginning of the season, Thomas, is you're around this team a lot, I'm around this team a lot, their demeanor has pretty much been the same.
Yep.
They have not gotten too high. They haven't gotten too low. You know, I've seen times in the past, we always go back to this core group that's been together forever, that if they've gone into a bad spell, I mean, you can tell. You can feel it in the room. That you can tell that, you know, they're upset, or you know, they're not feeling it, like they don't want to deal with us and stuff. It hasn't been that way.
Correct.
And even now that they're winning and things are going better, I mean, it's still just the same Predators team.
No, that is so true. And again, especially with the losing streak that occurred in November, you know, there's a lot of rumors that go out there, right?
Yeah.
And there's a lot of people that were ready for anything from coaching change to captaincy change, you know, all these crazy things happening. And I would totally agree with that. For you and I, two people who are frequently around the team, do have a pulse on what's going on, get to go to these practices, there never was a moment when I thought, you know, oh, this is a coach that's lost his team, or, oh, this is a captain that, you know, the leadership group needs to be changed because, you know, they just are doing the same old thing every now and then. No, on the contrast, I think it was a good thing because it was a team that had been through this before, had been through a lot of these struggles, wasn't a younger rookie field team that is, you know, thinking to themselves, oh gosh, if we don't change something really quickly, we could lose the whole season.
Yeah.
No, it was a group that could look at it, you know, pretty comprehensively and say, we've done this before. We've done it a lot of different ways. We've won the President's Trophy. We've done it that way. We've done get the 16 seed, the final seed in the Western Conference, and go to the Stanley Cup final. Like almost all of these players are the same. And I think that's a good point because that's a lot of times what you want. And sometimes it's frustrating as a fan maybe because you want to hear, oh, man, you know, why didn't somebody, you know, flip over the Gatorade or, you know, break their stick or something like that. It's like, well, no, because when you're on a 5-game winning streak, you've got to maintain your system and what's gotten you there and not get too excited. And conversely, you've got to do the same thing when you've lost 5 in a row because it's when you react too much that hockey's a weird sport and that emotion is a part of it. It can get into that game, right, with confidence and all those other things that, yes, you know, the advanced analytics are a big deal, but it's weird how those, you know, kind of different traits can impact a game as well. And I think if you go too far one way or the other, it can be a bad thing.
Yeah, and I think confidence is a great word to use because I've heard Peter Laviolette be asked the question before, especially during the playoffs, you know, can you carry momentum from game to game? And I don't think that's necessarily true, but I think you can carry confidence from game to game. I think momentum shifts so much over the course of a game let alone, you know, three games, a series, whatever. Mm-hmm. I think confidence, though, if you have your confidence, and it's we see that with young players like Daniel Carr and Yakov Trenin,
yeah,
that got a little pep in their step right now. They scored that goal, so they feel better. That, I think, carries over from game to game.
Right, and I think for me, in a league that is so good, has so much parity, this is not a big statement here. It's easier to lose than it is to win, right?
Yeah.
I mean,
Absolutely.
Is. And I think there's this assumption sometimes that when you have other sports, like take the NBA, for example, that the top is a lot different than the bottom. And there's a lot of times that a top team doesn't have to play its best and it can still win. But in the NHL, with the puck that bounces around and the flukiness of it, you're only getting so many goals, on average 4 or 5 per game, that the worst team in the standings can beat the best team in the standings on any given night. And if you don't, you know, keep that even keel nature, if you don't have that confidence, it's easier to lose than it is to win. And so I think you can let that affect you negatively if you don't approach it the right way. And now, like you said, now that we're on the other side of this, now that this Predators team has turned it around and recovered some in the standings, that I think we can look back and say, yeah, they were handling that the right way at the time.
How about Cale Yonkrook being second on the team in points, 21, or tied for second, I should say, with Philip Forsberg? I mean, when they made the trade for him, and it obviously was a prospect at the time, David Legwand had been, you know, the first draft pick, had been here since the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
Cale Yonkrook comes in, you don't really know what he's going to be, and then a couple years ago has a career year being that jack of all trades. You can move him up and down the lineup. He can play the wing. He can play center. And then he gets hurt, never really finds it again in the playoffs. Last year, not what, you know, he was hoping to be, but he's bounced back this year because he's been put in roles that, out of necessity with injuries,
right,
with Forsberg and Arvidsson, and he's lived up to it.
Right. That's what I would say. I don't know that Cale Yonkrook has had a genesis, has changed himself as a player, and I'm sure you've heard him say this. Head coach Pierre Laviolette says all the time that he may be the smartest guy on the ice. He always calls him a cerebral player, a smart guy that knows where he's supposed to be, what he's supposed to do. And I think to your point, last year wasn't really asked to do that. I mean, he was on the fourth line almost the whole season, or at least a large portion of it. And because of necessity, now that he's had to be asked to shoot a little bit more, get some power play time, be put in some different opportunities, I think we've been reminded of, oh, yeah, this is the guy that almost had a 20-goal season 2 years ago. And I think, again, playing with Philip Forsberg and Ryan Johansson can do a lot of wonders for a lot of people. And, of course, he's spent time on the second line as well at times with Matt Duchene, for example. But yes, I have noticed, you know, just some fine-tuning of the offensive portions of his game because that's the role that he's in right now. But I think he's always had that, per se. It's just it's gotten better.
Well, I think the offense in general, when you look at – if you go and you look at the stats, the offensive stats of the Preds, I mean, you would expect to see Forsberg, Duchene, Arvidsson when healthy up towards the top, Roman Josi, but there has been a mixed bag. I mean, we talked about Nick Bonino. Nick Bonino leading the team in goals, which, sure, that's exactly how we drew it up.
Right.
Cale Yonkrook being another one, but, you know, Ryan Ellis has had a nice year so far, and he's contributing offensively. They're spreading the puck around, and I think that's a good thing. And then as the season gets deeper and those superstars start to show themselves and start to really get into their own and find their game, that's going to just help this offense even more.
Right. When you're playing a sport that has 82 regular season games, and there's going to be different heroes on different nights, and overall you need that consistency and some level of reliability from the Matt Duchenes, the Philip Forsberg, those guys that are getting 20 minutes a night. And there's going to be moments where, like we talked about in the first segment, Rocco Grimaldi and Nick Bonino and Craig Smith, that line helps you, you know, gets that extra goal because, again, overwhelmingly the winner of a hockey game is only going to win by one goal or two or something very low like that. So that play here or there can make a big difference. And, yeah, for me, if I had to put my finger on, you know, what's changed, what's allowed the Preds to have points in 7 out of their last 8 games, I think early on in the season the offense couldn't have looked much better, right?
Yeah.
We all know the stats where they were number one in the league. They were averaging more than 4 goals per game. And I think quietly the defense had trailed off a little bit, but we didn't notice it at first because the Preds continued to win games 6-4 or, you know, by larger scores like that. The defense lapped. The goaltending had a bit of a slump in that stretch as well, which, again, that's going to happen, right? You're rarely going to have a 6-game losing streak and be like, well, 98% of this team is great. There's only – well, no, it takes other factors as well. The offense has been okay. It's been there. It's been a part of this foundation for most of this time. And for me, the defense really clicked. That was the main first move that got back to level set, got back to where it was earlier in the season. You've seen the goaltending follow that more recently, and now you're looking at a team that's like, okay, this is looking like the playoff team again that we saw in October.
This team's built on defense. So I knew, like, in talking to a lot of the guys, and I talked to Roman Josi the other day, and he made it to point to say, you know, we're built on that. I mean, we love that we have more of an offensive game now, that,
yeah,
you know, that's a part of the system. But so many defensemen drafted by this organization, and they've, you know, Barry Trotz back in the day, I mean, that's what they were known for. And Peter Laviolette, his system fits that as well. That was bothering them, and you could tell that that was bothering them, that they were having those defensive lapses, and now they have turned it around.
Right. I mean, you have to be so balanced in this league. And I remember a comment Laviolette made where he said, you know, the question was something to the effect of, you know, hey, you're getting 5-6 goals a game, but you're also allowing 4 or 5 goals. Why do you think that is? And I think it was almost a shift in that identity of, you know, we're an offensive team, so we should take more risk. We should stay in the offensive a little bit more. We should try to force some plays. And the Preds were just getting beat in transition, and we're giving up more opportunities than they would like. And I think just resetting and being like, no, if we control our half of the ice, we've got enough talent to get those 3 goals a game that we'll probably need to win. And so I think resetting there has been big as well.
We will get more into the game against Buffalo, which is just a 1-game road trip before they go on an actual road trip next week. But I am more, you know, they haven't played too many games on the road, 5-5-1 on the road this year. Any concern for you about that, just because they haven't had to do it as much, that the schedule fell, that a lot of games in the early part of the season were at home? Or is that something that, you know, maybe this long road trip can help fix?
Yeah, we'll see. Like you just said, I mean, it's a 4-game road trip coming up next week, and you've got a back-to-back in that and then another back-to-back to conclude this month with Pittsburgh. So I think the games in hand that we've seen, though, there's a lot of teams that the Predators have played fewer games than, that's going to catch up quickly. And yes, they'll absolutely be tested. I mean, they've got Dallas coming up at home this weekend, and then you mentioned the road games. The Islanders are one of the best in the East. Boston is the best team, yep, in the East. I mean, you're facing them, both of them, next week. So, no, I don't think that's something to be worried about. I don't want to sound too much like Laviolette here, but he always says, you know, I think you and I as media want to be like, oh, man, 4-game homestand, yeah, then this, then you're this, then. And he's like, schedule kind of is what it is, right? Right. Like, we're going to play these same teams. Yes, the team can bond and be better when it's on the road, but the team can also be more comfortable, sleep in their own bed, and win at home. So it's funny how last year a lot of the story was, man, why isn't the home record better? The home record, yeah, has been better. And so, again, I'm not saying that's flip-flopped per se, but now we'll see what they'll be able to do on the road as well. Again, the last time that they had a key road win that kind of helped this stretch turn around was in St. Louis, of course, and I think that was about as good a road game as I've seen from them this season. That's the recipe.
Completely
right,
agree.
There. That is just pure intensity, pure you know, attack from the very start of the game. They built a 2-0 lead, and then were the better team for almost the full 60 minutes against St. Louis. That's a quality win. That's probably the best one they've had in the last month. You do that against most teams, you're going to like what you see.
Chase McCabe and Thomas Willis of NashvillePredators.com and the POP. It is Preds Insiders in for Ryan Porth this evening. We're at Boomba's here on Highway 100 in Bellevue. Smashville Live coming up at the top of the next hour. Cool Springs Laser Dentistry, Wyatt Johnson Ford, Kerry Zier, Remax Elite, and Geno Zeiss bring all of this on Preds Insiders to you. When we come back, there's been a coaching change for one of the teams in the Central Division. We will discuss that next here on Preds Insiders, ESPN 102.5 The Game. We are back on Preds Insiders here on ESPN 102.5 The Game, and streaming all around the world on the Game Nashville app. How's it going? Chase McCabe in for Ryan Porth tonight alongside Thomas Willis of NashvillePredators.com and co-host of the POP, the Preds official podcast. You can get that, of course, on thegamenashville.com, NashvillePredators.com, iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. All you have to do is search for the Predators official podcast, the POP. What do you got coming up this week?
So we actually recorded our interview last night for this week. It's John Russell, the Predators team photographer, who's with the organization for 22 years. And again, like it says in our show intro, whenever we can, we want to go behind the scenes.
Yeah.
We kind of give a perspective that people don't get a lot. And I think that's just one right off the top, right? The fact that the Predators have basically had the same team photographer the whole time that they've existed. He's been there for every moment, the Stanley Cup final from, you know, the first game to this most recent game. Kind of cool to just see what he gets to see, and from going in to the locker room, from going behind the scenes himself to be able to capture those iconic moments. It's a good one. So, yeah, we've already talked to him, and then we're going to talk to Nick Bonino next week. He is one of the few Preds players who's played in an outdoor game before. Yeah. He, of course, was in the Stadium Series with Pittsburgh. So we're getting close, getting ramped up for the Winter Classic, as I'm sure you are as well. And we wanted to hear from one of the few people on this Predators roster who's at least gotten that chance to do it before, and not only for the players' perspective, but from our fans as well. You know, what's that day going to be like on January the 1st in Dallas?
Yeah, we're definitely getting ready for that. Ryan and I have been doing a Road to Dallas series, and we've had different interviews. We actually just sat down with Sean Henry that'll air this weekend, who, of course, will be on Smashville Live tonight. But we talked to Barry Trotz, Scott Hartnell, you know, people that have had experiences with the Winter Classic. So definitely cool. But check out the Preds official podcast. So the Central Division, Thomas, there was a change yesterday, and it shocked us all because the Dallas Stars, as of late, have been playing well. I mean, they're in that number one wild card spot right now after starting off slow. But we saw what they did last year in the playoffs, of course, defeating the Predators in the first round. But they dismissed their head coach, Jim Montgomery, for what general manager Jim Nill is calling unprofessional conduct. And the details have not come out yet on that. They probably will at some point, but a lot of layers to this. But they have moved on. And Rick Bowness is now the interim head coach of the Stars.
Right. Like you said, I think the reason it was shocking was because it wasn't performance-based. Yeah. It wasn't about the team and its success on the ice. And again, I don't think we have to get into this too much, but Gary Bettman, the initial commissioner, has come out and taken a good and firm stance on, you know, we're not going to tolerate, you know, like conduct, you know, poor conduct off the anything off the ice, on the ice, or interacting to players, or, you know, anything behind closed doors. Like, we're going to be above the line. We're going to be above board. And so for whatever that reason was, the Stars, you know, they wanted to be a quality organization as well and made that move, as tough as it may be for their immediate on-ice success. But you're right. It was only his first year as an NHL coach last year.
Right.
Was able to turn the Stars around down the stretch before they met Nashville in the first round. And like you said, maybe one of the worst teams to start the season, but have just been absolutely on fire the last 15 games or so, I would say.
And they're 1 point out of third in the Central Division.
Yeah, so I think that's why it was such a shock for it to come at that moment, considering where the team was at.
So from a strictly hockey standpoint with them, I mean, this obviously shakes things up in the Central with a coaching change. I feel like that's a pretty good team that the Predators are going to see not only this weekend, but, of course, at the end of the month for the Winter Classic that we've been talking about. But it does have to shake things up a little bit within that organization, because now you have a new voice on the bench.
Right. I would imagine the systematic play doesn't change too much because they do have the assistant coach as the interim. This is me forecasting. I don't know this for sure. I wouldn't think that they would hire a coach in season, but we'll see. Maybe they will. So because of that, it's likely, like you said, a lot of Jim Montgomery's fingerprints on it, but still a new voice, still a new coach, a new person in the locker room before each and every game, and saying, you know, hey, this is the way we're going to go tonight. And he does have previous NHL experience behind the bench. He was with the Phoenix Coyotes, I guess, at the time years ago. But still, it's going to be different, and it's going to be interesting to see how they respond to that, especially with as well as they were playing. Is it easy to say, let's just keep doing it? Or, you know, is it tough? And do you see some of those, you know, potential bad habits they had earlier on in the season, you know, start to leak back into their game? Because for what that Stars team is, which is one of the best lines in hockey with Radulov, Sagan, and Benn, a lot of times when those three are
Radulov
together.
Was a healthy scratch.
Yeah, a couple nights ago. I saw that, yeah. But anyways, when that trio's together, and they've only added to it with Corey Perry, of course, and then Joe Pavelski, despite those big names, they are one of the stingiest defensive teams in the Western Conference. That was their bread and butter. That's what led to success last year. So even though they have what you would think is offensive flair, they're very big on playing within their system, and, you know, running a 1-3-1 a lot of times, or at least feels like it from that perspective. Of course, more of a 2-3 in the neutral zone, but we'll see. I mean, yeah. I would anticipate not too much of a hiccup. They, of course, did win their most recent game, I guess, last night under the new interim head coach, but we'll see. Definitely a shakeup that you and I don't think would have seen coming, of course, because of where the team was at on the ice.
Well, in the Central Division as a whole, as we kind of dive into that, I mean, it's pretty much jumbled together. Now, you have the Predators, Minnesota, and Chicago that are kind of there together points-wise, but the Preds only six back of Dallas right now. Dallas has 39. The Predators sit with 33. But St. Louis, they've struggled a little bit as of late, losing three in a row after pretty much picking up where they left off with a Stanley Cup title. And I think the question was raised. I know I've talked about it of, can they sustain it? Can they continue to be this good? And I think now we're seeing the rest of the division. Oh, by the way, Colorado and Winnipeg.
Yeah.
Well, they're getting better and better.
Right. I think from the number of teams, the list of teams, I don't think you and I are surprised. We probably forecasted some combination of St. Louis, Colorado, Winnipeg, Dallas, and Nashville in the top five. It was expected Minnesota and Chicago are trailing behind. The order of it is what's a little bit surprising right now. I think with what the Blues did down the stretch in the playoffs, you're expecting there's got to be some kind of regression to the mean. They surely can't continue to be this good.
And one of their best players is out.
And Vladimir Tarasenko is out for 6 months. And yet, outside of the last three games, which they've lost, they've probably been the best team in the Western Conference. I would argue the Colorado Avalanche appear to be the team that you should be the most afraid of, I would say, at this point. And I think Dallas will recover and continue to be about where they are. If I had to pick one team, I think the Winnipeg Jets are playing a little above their head right now.
Yeah.
And I would think that if you're Nashville, you're thinking to yourself, we can at least get into that top four conversation and make it St. Louis, Colorado, Dallas, and Nashville try to catch up and pass a Winnipeg. Because with all the changes they had, I mean, virtually every single one of their defensemen is a new player for this season compared to last year. I think you're thinking maybe they're a little bit higher in the standings than they should be. But we'll see. I mean, it's very, very close, very tight as it is year after year.
Yeah, and the thing with Winnipeg, I mean, I was ready to write them off before the season even began because the Byfuglien situation, and you had some RFAs and Laine and Connor.
Jacob Trouba, Tyler Myers, all moving on. Yes.
Yeah, I mean, they had a lot of changes with that team, but yet here they are in December sitting third in the Central Division. Now, I want to go back to Colorado because the biggest rumor right now is that Taylor Hall is going to be traded from the New Jersey Devils. And so, you know, I'm one of those. I'll get on Twitter and I'll check out all the rumor sites and read the, you know, Pierre LeBruns and Elliot Friedman, who we have on Darren Donick and Chase every week, and just kind of see what they're thinking. And you see Taylor Hall linked to Colorado.
Yeah.
Like, don't they have enough?
Right. I know. Well, and particularly in their case, to have been able to build so much of it with draft capital and so many people on entry-level deals. That's the big kicker, right? They could easily fit in a Taylor Hall and give him $8 or $9 million and yet still have plenty of draft picks to go. Again, with the Matthew Shane trade, sending him from Colorado to Ottawa, three-team deal, Nashville involved as well. They got a lot from that, and they got a lot for the return for Kyle Turris as well as a part of that, you know, with Sam Girard ending up there with the second-round pick and Vlad Kamenev from Nashville. And so credit Joe Sakic, their general manager, for building to the point that, you know, this is the moment where they need to compete. I know, you know, he made some waves recently for Nate MacKinnon. Arguably their best player, said recently, on my next deal, I'd still take less money to keep this group together. That's great, and maybe he will, but I think, you know, this is the moment where you've got a Girard, where you've got a Cale Makar, where you've got that talent on the back end, and yet they're at that lower price point that you need to be able to win right now. And I think Predators fans have seen that in particular, right? 2 years ago, they saw this team in the playoffs, and I think all of us walked away from that six-game series and were like, wow, Colorado was a little bit better than we thought. They only build on it last year, probably should have been in the Western Conference Final, and then now they're right back where they were over the past two seasons.
I think it's funny to me as we wrap this part up of I look at the schedule for the Preds, the only Central Division matchup they have this month is this Saturday hosting the Dallas Stars. He is Thomas Willis of the Nashville Predators, NashvillePredators.com, and the Preds official podcast. Chase McCabe in for Ryan Porth. When we come back, we'll set up the Predators on the road, a one-game road trip tomorrow against Buffalo. We will do that next. It is Preds Insiders brought to you by Cool Springs Laser Dentistry, Wyatt Johnson Ford, Kerry Zire, Remax Elite, and Geno's East on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Thank you, Ryan. Welcome back in. It is Preds Insiders. We are live at Boomba's on Highway 100 in Bellevue. Smashville Live coming up in just a few minutes. The president and CEO, Sean Henry, is in the house. He will be my guest for Smashville Live tonight, so look forward to talking to him. But Preds Insiders, Chase McCabe, Thomas Willis in for Ryan Porth tonight. Thomas does great work for NashvillePredators.com and the POP, the Preds official podcast. So the Preds are on the road. They have left. They have landed in Buffalo, New York, as they will take on the Buffalo Sabres tomorrow night. And Thomas, you look at the Buffalo Sabres right now. I mean, having a good start to the year. They went through a coaching change in the offseason. Of course, Phil Housley, we all know from his time here in Nashville, but they're sitting second in the Atlantic Division to Boston right now. They're playing some pretty good hockey as well.
Playing excellent hockey. Jack Eichel on a 14-game point streak, so that helps. I feel like he truly has flown under the radar, honestly, over the course of his career, right?
Yeah.
Like, he comes out a different season. He's probably the first overall draft pick, but comes out in the year that Connor McDavid is also present and doesn't really get heralded, right, as one of probably the best players at under 25, for sure. Like, he's still so young because of starting when he was 18, and he's finally gotten some complimentary pieces, which I think he's needed. I'm thinking of Jeff Skinner in particular, you know, off the big year from last season. And so the offense has been there. And, hey, Carter Hutton, a familiar friend and foe as well, at least for tomorrow, in net for them most nights. So he's been good as well. And you're right. I think they've responded very well to what we used to kind of joke about was something that Buffalo did, right? They would start so hot. We remember the 10-game winning streak they had last year.
Yep.
Were never able to recover. They kind of did that again. Started hot, cooled off. But then this year they've actually been able to say, no, let's continue. Let's get back on track. And like you said, I mean, all the way up to second in their division. I think they've won three or four of their last four games. So they're pretty hot. One of the better teams the Preds will have faced in the last couple weeks. It'll be a tough test tomorrow.
Yeah, they're one of those teams that when you look at their roster, I mean, you'll see some names that, okay, they're kind of established, you know them, but they're pretty young. And that's what they've been trying to do after, you know, they had one run where they had a veteran group and then shipped those guys off and were able to rebuild. And Jack Eichel leads the way for the Sabres. But now you're starting to see, similar to Colorado, all that young talent start to get that experience and start to put things together.
Yeah, and some quality wins. Just beat the St. Louis Blues yesterday 5-2. Beat the Edmonton Oilers, one of the surprise teams in the Western Conference, 3-2 on Saturday in overtime, and then technically lost it. But what a crazy game. One of the best just fun highlight packages to watch from Saturday. I guess they beat the Oilers on Sunday, I should say, 6-5. They lost to Vancouver. But again, they've been facing some high-quality opponents and coming away with points. So, again, I don't know if you're the person that believes in jinx or that sort of thing, but they're not a real thing, and so it's just stats. The Predators have actually won more than 8 consecutive times up in Buffalo. It's the second longest streak they have. So, again, has no real impact on tomorrow's game, but have found a lot of success up there recently, so we'll see. I would expect after giving UC Saros a start against an opponent he saw a lot in the Sharks like we talked about, Pecorini has awesome career numbers against the Sabres as well. So we'll see. I'm kind of excited for that one. It should be a fun one.
Yeah, I think so, because you see a lot of a skill, a lot of talent on both sides. So I think that's going to make for a fun hockey game. And, you know, if we get Pecorini versus Carter Hutton, I think that would be even better, because Carter Hutton, you know, I think was a big important piece a few years ago for the Nashville Predators when they were trying to find who that next backup was going to be to Pecorini. And of course, Carter Hutton playing a big role when Pecorini was out, you know, with a long-term injury. So Carter Hutton, of course, a part of all that as well. So Preds fans seem to like him still and look fondly on Carter Hutton's time here in Nashville.
Hey, thanks for having me, guys, he was once famous for on the Fox Sports Tennessee broadcast. Yeah, that was a good one. So I wouldn't leave you with an incomplete stat. Nashville has won 8 consecutive road games over Buffalo. That goes back to 2008 because, being in different conferences, usually only going up there once a year. It's their second longest active road winning streak against a single opponent. Here's an interesting note as well. They've been low scoring traditionally. You remember it was a shutout, one of the final games of the season last year when the Preds went up to Buffalo. That 3-game winning streak that helped them win the Central Division on the final day. Buffalo was what kind of kick-started that little 3-game winning streak that they went on. They've held the Sabres to 2 or fewer goals 6 out of 8 times.
Oof.
So it's been low scoring when the games have gone up in New York. So we'll see.
We will we'll have coverage starting at 5 o'clock tomorrow here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. So, Thomas, as we have a couple minutes left before your boss, Sean Henry,
yes,
becomes my guest on Smashville Live, the Winter Classic coming up at the end of the month, just tell the fans some things that you guys have planned with just a few weeks left before that big event.
Yeah, so I would be remiss if I did not mention, so the next home game, Saturday, for starters, that's at 5:30, a bit
right.
of a unique time, so I guess 4:30 pregame for you guys here on the station. We're calling it a Winter Classic preview because it will yep. be the only time the Stars and Preds will play each other before the Winter Classic on January the 1st. So expect to see some Winter Classic theming from anywhere from Fang Vision on the scoreboard to your program, some different elements like that. So you'll
Can
be able
turn
to
turn the temperature down and have yeah. some snow in the arena.
We'll take the roof off of Bridgestone Arena. No, we will not do that. But again, you'll get a taste of it there for those, you know, who aren't able to go. And of course, you hopefully saw the Winter Classic Roman Josi bobbleheads from the
yes.
last game on Tuesday. Those are very cool. I'm sure some of those will still be available at the foundation table, for example. So sorry, wanted to mention that though. So tickets still available there. Go to Ticketmaster.com or NashvillePredators.com to kind of get that taste of it. As far as the actual Winter Classic game on January the 1st, it's going to be fun. I think you've learned this being around the organization from hosting the All-Star game to the Stanley Cup final a year later in 2016 and 2017. We like to push the envelope. We like
yeah.
to try and do new things. And even where it is not here, not in Tennessee, not in Nashville, even as the road city, I mean, the numbers are absolutely incredible. Setting records. Looks like it'll be the second highest attended Winter Classic game of all time. And that's only because the Big House in Michigan seats about 20 more thousand. So the NHL has opened up different sections in the Cotton Bowl than they were anticipating. But the party's not just inside the stadium. It's outside as well. So we're going to call it the Smashville Stampede. And there'll be anything from bull riding to contests to prizes to a lot of gear, and it'll be very giveaways and that sort of thing. It'd be really cool to see. I mean, just think about it, right? Like, we've only really gotten to see 17 or so thousand Preds fans in one place at a time. That's not going to be the case anymore.
Yeah.
We're going to see 20, 25, 30 all in one place. Like, that one goal, that moment's going to be magnified so much. It's going to be really cool to see.
I am really looking forward to it. And Thomas, we appreciate the time tonight. Real quick, before we get out of here, Elliot Friedman of Sportsnet
yes.
is reporting Peter DeBoer is out as the head coach of the San Jose Sharks that were just here last night. And he is saying it's a hockey decision, nothing else. Unfortunately, I have to clarify those things, it seems,
yeah.
these days. But Peter DeBoer out as the head coach of the San Jose Sharks. Thomas Willis from the Nashville Predators, appreciate it, my friend.
100%.
We'll do it again soon.
Let's do
again,
it.
This has been Preds Insiders, brought to you by Cool Springs Laser Dentistry, Wyatt Johnson Ford, Kerry Zaire, Remax Elite, and Gino Z. Stick around. I'm not done. Smashville Live from Boom Boz here in Bellevue is next with the president, Sean Henry, on ESPN 102.5 The Game.